We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Blue Wire.
Hello and welcome to the Eurostep episode 26. I'm Kane Pittman and I'm joined by Ty Windisch as always. And Ty, we signed off the last episode by saying or hoping that we would have a different mood with our post-game one podcast. And while that looked in a little bit of danger, in the end, we got a good result.
We did. I don't know about you, but it didn't feel horrible to me during this game for the Bucks. The Bucks win 108-100 over Toronto in game one after trailing, I think, what were they up, 8-0 early, and then they gave that up, and then they trailed the whole rest of the game until the fourth quarter, and then they didn't anymore, I guess is the most succinct way to put it. But when the shots don't fall, I always have this confidence that they will eventually. So I kind of thought this could happen. Where were you at on this game during?
Yeah, no, I really was feeling pretty good. And you know, in the end, the Bucks end up winning 108-100 on the back of a 32-17 fourth quarter. The Bucks finally get some shots to go in that fourth quarter and able to come from behind to win. This was something that that I was talking about at the game, and I had a conversation with Eric Name at halftime, and we sort of looked at each other and said, well, you know, I feel like this is what we said the Raptors – this is a way we said the Raptors could hurt the Bucks if they make a heap of shots, and they were doing that. The Bucks weren't. I think the good news or the positive for the Bucks were that they were hanging around in the game, and as we've seen so many times before – the Bucks can sustain this pressure, and eventually the damn wall breaks, and we saw that for the Bucks. You know, fortunately, it happened. It happened late, but it happened, and we've seen that so many times before. And in the end, you were looking at a game that, for the most part, looked like it could come down to maybe the last possession or so. The Bucks end up winning by 8 points, and really. There was one guy that the Bucks had no chance of winning this game without, and that was Brook Lopez.
Yeah, I think can we put the Brook Lopez? Can he play in the can he play in the playoffs? Question to rest. It sickens me to even use those words in that order after what happened last night. Brook Lopez, after starting off cold, continuing his cold streak from the Boston series, ends with 21 shots, which is insane for him. 12 for 21 from the field, 4 for 11 from deep, 1 for 2 from the three-point line, 11 rebounds. Rare double-double for Brook Lopez to go with his 29 points. That's team high 29 points for Brook Lopez, 4 blocks too. Continue to do the defensive things we've seen from him. But wow, just getting involved everywhere late, going on personal scoring runs in that fourth quarter. I think in the third quarter he might have had one too. I think he did. Just a huge performance from him. He led the Bucks player in 3-pointers made, definitely led them in 3-pointers attempted. My favorite play though might have been the weird slow 2-on-1 fast break with him and Middleton against Lowry, where Chris just like takes up as much time as possible so Lopez can get to the play and then sort of dunk on Kyle Lowry, although it wasn't the most intense or beautiful slam you've ever seen in your life. That whole play, I was just wondering, how can no one else for either team be in the frame right now? What a weird play, but it ended up being super important.
Yeah, that was at such an important time in the game as well there in the fourth quarter. But I think for Lopez, this is something we've seen a little bit at times where, look, we know he's gonna let it fly from the outside, and you touched on the 21 shots. He has 11 three-point attempts, ends up making 4 of those, which is not too bad. So he's shooting 36% on the day. You'll take that. I think the really, really important thing for Brook Lopez was, and it started in the second quarter, because you could see that he was getting frustrated, and it's not something that Lopez can hide. When he's frustrated, you know, he shows all his emotions, and he was getting frustrated that the outside shot was not falling, and in some cases, it was not close to falling. He threw a couple like directly off the backboard. He was missing by a long, long way. Importantly, he was able to get on the offensive glass and get a couple of putbacks. So when you look at the 12 made field goals for Lopez, and only four of them are from the outside, he gets 8 other baskets inside the perimeter. And I think that was really, really important because, look, not the biggest rebounding accumulator in the league, Brook Lopez. I think that's fair to say, but he gets his 11 because he has 4 on the offensive glass. The offensive glass was an area that the Bucks really, really played well. They out-rebounded the Raptors 15-8 on the offensive glass. They were able to get second chance opportunities, but Lopez, it was really one of those games to me where he realized that, look, I need to do other stuff because this is not working for me standing on the perimeter and shooting. We know the way that game 5 went against Boston where he didn't do much else. He had 7 shots. They were all from the outside. He missed all of them. He wasn't able to be a defensive influence, and you already touched on the 4 blocks last night. So just really the complete game from Lopez, and for mine, I mean, by far the best game he's played as a Buck. And I tweeted it after, but when I was sort of sitting in that press conference room and looking at Lopez out there, I couldn't stop thinking about the fact that this guy led the Bucks to a win in the conference finals, and the Bucks signed him for $3 million,
and just away from a team that was just absolutely dying for someone to do the things he did. Like, they needed it so badly. Tough scene. Not for the Bucks though. You mentioned the offensive rebounding. I think that was huge, especially in the sort of the slog part of the game where the Bucks trailed consistently, brought it close a couple of times. It seemed like the Raptors, and especially Kyle Lowry, who best playoff game of his life, I would say. I mean, it's going to hurt legacy-wise for him that the Raptors don't get the win. And not his legacy, but I just mean like the sort of like the ethos, or not the ethos, but like the myth of this game. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it's going to feel less special to Raptors fans, I guess, is the simple way of saying it, because they don't win this game. But my goodness, a wild night from Kyle Lowry, shooting 7-for-9 from 3-point range. That's just obscene. That's excessive. Like, I don't know if Steph has ever done that, but Milwaukee doesn't let this game get out of hand while Lowry is nailing all those. I think in a large part due to those offensive boards. Brook has 4. Giannis has 4. And on a day where I don't think he did a lot else that was great, Nico Mirotic grabs 3 as well. And it seemed like he got some really timely ones for the Bucks. So, and then Bledsoe, Ersan, Brogdon, and Patsy all got 1 as well. So just nice to see this team finding other ways to win that aren't necessarily, you know, the usual sort of equation for a Bucks victory.
Yeah, and they had to do that. It was one of those nights. And I want to talk about Lowry because this is a guy that when I was analyzing the series, and obviously with you on the Eurostep and other, you know, radio spots and that sort of stuff, I said that Lowry is the guy that when you're looking at this series, he can be such a big factor for Toronto, and he needs to be a big factor for them. But I really questioned whether he was going to be able to get over whatever the problem was with playing against Eric Bledsoe and George Hill to a lesser extent. So I thought that this was such a mental thing for Lowry, and I questioned whether he was going to be able to get over it because, you know, as you sort of touched on, this wasn't just a problem he's had with Bledsoe in the regular season. He hasn't been great in the playoffs either, and he does a lot of little things that often aren't recorded. I know Nick Nurse has really been stressing that point, but you know, to be fair, Nick Nurse should do that if he's a good coach, because he has to try and get this guy feeling good about himself somehow. And Lowry wasn't shooting the ball well. He wasn't scoring the ball a lot or as much as they would need. So this was an incredible game for Lowry, and to do that in game one on the road after all the things we've seen against Bledsoe was just a ridiculous performance from him. I mean, he hit shots early, and that was key, and he hit three threes in the first quarter, and I was like, okay, well, look, Lowry's feeling a little bit here, but it just didn't go away, and there was a stretch in the fourth quarter. He hit a big three to give them the lead, 86-84. A couple possessions after that, he hit this ridiculous step back contested shot that his foot was just on the line, thankfully for the Bucks. But this guy was just hitting shots all night long, and I think you have to give a lot of credit to Kyle Lowry. And you talk about offensive rebounds; he gets three himself, and a couple of them were in traffic. This guy really stepped up in a way that I didn't think that he would, or I didn't think that he could. With this matchup, to be honest. So for the Raptors now, I just don't think that that's a performance, you know, you can afford to waste in a series like this, particularly on the road when the Bucks have home court advantage. A really stunning game from Lowry. But as you sort of pointed out, at the end of the night, he walks off the court. I'm not sure what he's thinking, because can he shoot that well again? I don't think so. I mean, it's ridiculous. 10 for 15 from the field, 7 for 9 from 3. So for the Raptors to see that performance go to waste in some ways, and this is maybe a little bit extreme, but it reminded me of, and I was thinking about this last night with the Bucks on the road in game one last year against Boston, where Middleton hits that half-court shot and then the Bucks go ahead and lose. And I think there's some things that can happen at the start of a series that can really alter the whole matchup, and you, if you can't take advantage of these crazy things that happen or sort of outlier things that happen, then you can look back and say, wow, that was a wasted opportunity, and maybe this is one of those moments for Toronto.
I think it certainly is, especially because, you know, we were sort of off base with who it would be, but I think a big part of our analysis before the series was, okay, well, let's assume Kawhi gets his. We haven't talked about him yet. He did. I mean, 26 shots, 31 points is great scoring game for him. I mean, 10 for 10 on free throws. He only shoots 1 for 5 on threes. I think the Bucks tried to take that away from him very consciously. I thought Chris Middleton did a really good job. I mean, you can live with that. He's Kawhi Leonard. He's going to score points, at least make it sort of hard for him. He shot well under 50%, so that's fine. They get big contribution from one other guy. We expected more Pascal Siakam. He was not that effective. When Giannis was on him, he wasn't effective at all. 15 points for Siakam on 20 shots, 2 for 9 from 3. Again, we talked, especially, I think I talked about this before the series. I mean, you'll live with him if he's going to beat you from 3, and it's kind of the same with Lowry, honestly. You just kind of live with that. That's just, okay, we can't take away everything, fine. In game 1, Siakam did not beat you from 3. So he gives you 15, and then we already talked about Lowry. He added 30. So between those three guys, you have 76 points. Nobody else scores more than 6 on the Raptors. Marc Gasol, after nailing a couple threes early, doesn't make another shot. Did not look that comfortable shooting. Looked like he would prefer to do a dribble handoff. He ends with 6 points. It's just not enough. Danny Green continues to not be able to shoot the ball that well. He ends with 6 points, but I think three of them on an Eric Bledsoe mistake foul from 3-point range. You look at the bench after Fred VanVleet and Norm Powell start hot. They don't finish hot. 6 points for Powell, 2 for VanVleet, and Serge Ibaka adds 4 and 17 bench minutes too. This is kind of what we expected from the Raptors' complimentary pieces. So I agree with you. I think you get that kind of a game from Lowry, who's not a guy you can rely on for 30 points. There's no guy you can rely on to go 7 for 9 from three. It doesn't happen often, almost ever. I just don't know what the Raptors walk away from this saying, oh, if we just continue to do this or change this one thing, then we can win, especially because even with the late run, still a way under variance game for the Bucks from 3-point range, 25% from three. You know, if they even shoot 30, 32%, which is still below average, I mean, this thing is all of a sudden a double-digit win for the Bucks. It's tough for Toronto to look at this, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I will say, and look, I give a lot of credit to these sort of non-Kawhi Raptors players. Now, I think that the Bucks were allowing a lot of this, but one of my big sort of, takes before the series or ways that the Raptors can really beat the Bucks and give the Bucks trouble in this series was they need to shoot threes because they're going to get open threes. And these other guys, whether it's Siakam or Gasol or Green, Lowry, all these guys, Ibaka, they need to shoot the threes that the Bucks give them. And my question was, are these guys going to be aggressive and are they going to take those looks that they're given? Now, early in the game, they were doing that and they were hitting them. And as I was watching the game, I was thinking to myself, well, okay, this could potentially sort of change my perspective on what the series is going to be. Now, I wasn't concerned from the Bucks' point of view because the Raptors were just scorching the Nets. And I did tweet at one point that, okay, the Raptors are really shooting these shots from the outside, but they're making them. So what's going to happen when they start to miss? Are they going to go back in their shell a little bit? I think they did. You already touched on Gasol. Yeah, I think he did. For him, as I said in the last podcast, he only averaged 7 field goal attempts per game as a Raptor. He had 11 last night. So look, he did look for his shot a little bit more. I think that was more so early in the game. When the shots were missing, sort of hesitation started to creep in for him. Pascal Siakam, this is the interesting one for me because, look, I thought he was dangerous early. He threw down a huge dunk with Lopez in the vicinity there late in the first quarter. Hits a couple of threes. But this is a great number for the Bucks. Pascal Siakam going 2 for 9 from three, as you already touched on, because the Bucks do not want him getting into the paint. He is such a clever shot maker or shot creator once he gets into the paint. He's super long. He uses the glass well and can finish in the paint. So the Bucks want him shooting. And he took those shots. So I think this was a little bit of both here where for the Raptors, he needs to keep shooting them. But the Bucks are like, okay, well, hey, keep going. Because if you don't make them, we're going to get in your head and make you hesitate about whether you should be taking those shots. And if he starts to think that way, it's going to be tough for him to make them. And the Bucks have won that battle. But from Milwaukee's point of view, you talk about the outlier shooting. So the Bucks shoot 25%. So in games this season now, including the playoffs, where the Bucks shoot less than 26% from three, after last night they are now 8-6. So you think about a team now that is, what would they be on the season? 69-23 on the season, including the playoffs. The Bucks 69-23. They're 8-6 when they shoot less than 26%. So. That's generally not a good sign for this team. And the other number is when the Bucks shoot less than 26% from three and the opposition shoots greater than 35, as the Raptors did, they're only 4-4. They're a 500 team. So to pinch this game in the conference finals in game one, that's huge for Milwaukee.
Yeah, I would say I'm surprised their records are those good in that good in those scenarios. But I guess it just speaks to how great this team is. Did it seem to you like the Raptors kind of gummed up and went more sort of isolation? We'll have guys, especially Lowry, and he kind of earned the right too, I feel like. But it felt to me like they played less team ball late in the game, and that I think is always a reason why you could see less three-pointers falling.
Yeah, I think that's a fair call. Watching Leonard was such a crazy thing last night. I mean, I guess it has been the whole playoffs, but I was sitting there and I was trying to think through what the Bucks want. I mean, when Leonard has the ball in his hands, because to me, before the Celtics series, you think about how good Kyrie Irving is handling the ball and how good he can be as a shot creator. And for Irving, that really went out the window the longer the series went, because the more he dribbled, the more comfortable the Bucks felt that they could push him into a difficult shot. I sort of felt that way last night with Kawhi. Obviously, it's a little bit different because Kawhi has such a great size advantage over someone like Irving, and he can just rise up and get a shot off at all times. But, geez, he takes some tough shots. He is a tough shot taker, Kawhi Leonard, and a lot of the credit has to go to Middleton, and I thought Brogdon, who defended him quite well, but the Bucks. So Middleton obviously always had a hand in his face, and Lopez was obviously there to back him up if Leonard sort of penetrated the paint. But geez, he takes tough, tough shots, and if you look at the line of 10-for-26 shooting. The Bucks are not going to care if Leonard gets 30 points if it takes him 26 shots to get there. I just thought the Bucks did an excellent job of forcing him into those tough sort of fading mid-range shots that he does like to take. But then even for him, it's not a really high percentage shot.
No, and then I think the other stat with Leonard, which kind of sort of shows you why this is something a lot of people talk about with him, all those touches, all that time dominating the ball, 2 assists. That's often or long for, I think, probably as long as he's been a sort of, you know, since he made the switch from, fun, young defensive player to, this guy might be a superstar. That's been the one thing, aside from, you know, obviously like the weird exit with the Spurs and Uncle Dennis and whatever else. But the one on-court thing has been, well, he's a great defender, great scorer from everywhere, but maybe he doesn't move the ball with the best of them. And I think that was on display today. And then when his shot wasn't falling in the fourth quarter, I think non-Lowry Raptors were like 0-for-15 in the fourth quarter or something wild like that, which I'm sure that is something the Raptors will point to and say, this is why we can win the next games, whatever else. But, when the shot isn't falling, if you're not going to be able to make the right passes, then your possessions just aren't doing anything. And it's easy to say that. I mean, I don't think it's very instructive to say, you know, missing all your shots is bad. Like, duh, of course it is. But I just mean, you know, people always talk about how Giannis is limited when he can't get to the paint or whatever else. Well, in a way, Kawhi is limited if the Bucks defense is going to continue to do a good job on him and he's not going to consistently move the ball and find open shooters or cutters or better looks.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. One thing I'm interested in, and when you look at the fourth quarter, and I already mentioned the 32-17 fourth for the Bucks, I mean, how much of a factor is fatigue in this? Because we know from watching the Bucks all year, and we saw it often, and in the Celtics series, the third quarter was the key stretch or the series defining quarter in that series. But last night it was the fourth quarter after the Bucks, for the most part, felt like they were just really just hanging on in the third quarter. It was the fourth where the Bucks were able to take over. And I'm just looking at the box score and the minutes of this game. So Kawhi Leonard, 42 minutes. Siakam, 42. Gasol, 39. Green, 35. And Kyle Lowry, 40. So the lowest minute total for the starters for Toronto is 35 for Danny Green. There's only one Bucks starter that gets over that, and that's Giannis with just 37. So it was kind of interesting watching this unfold through the game, because Nick Nurse clearly does not feel comfortable playing at all with Kawhi Leonard off the floor. I mean, it just feels like this team completely collapses as soon as Leonard gets on the bench. So he was really, really hesitant to play at all with Leonard off the floor, whereas on the other end, Bud, he just doesn't care. He's like, I'm getting Giannis's rest. He's like, I didn't care what the game situation is. I'm getting Giannis's rest, and Giannis is going to be at full force in the fourth quarter. And I think we saw that again. I mean, when you look at the minutes, Giannis to play only 37 minutes in a game that the Bucks were down by close to double digits for almost the first three quarters, and Bud just didn't panic. He's like, I don't really care about that. I'm gonna ride some of the other guys. George Hill again, 27. Brogdon, 26. But you know, even Bledsoe under 30 minutes for Bledsoe. Milton only plays 34. There's been a lot of talk about Bud's rotation and. Does he and a lot of criticism? Like, does he need to play these starters more? Can he afford to keep playing the bench? I was sitting there watching that game, and once the game finished, and I thought to myself, you know what? The Bucks wear teams down, and we've seen this through defensive energy and defensive effort. And this team, everything starts on the defensive end, but that takes a lot of energy out of this team. And the fact that Bud keeps the minutes so even through the first three quarters allows these guys to get on top of teams in the fourth. And it wasn't lost on me last night that this big fourth quarter may have had a lot to do with fatigue.
No, I definitely think that it was noticeable, especially on the Raptors side, how sort of gassed everyone was. And I think that does contribute to, you know, a lot of those missed shots for the Lowry Raptors. I think there's interesting things to look at with the Bucks rotations. It felt like Bud kind of went away from Ersan, who plays only 14 minutes, which isn't a lot for him. And then Pat C only plays 11. So some of the guys we're used to seeing contribute do play less. Nico Mirotic playing 25, I thought was interesting. This is kind of a harsh pivot just because I don't have too much additional takes on the minutes. I think you're dead on. I think it worked out in this game. I think for better or worse, that's going to be Bud's thing, is let's get our guys rested so we can make sure they're in for crucial minutes. So that Giannis did sit sometimes in the fourth quarter, I wasn't sure about. But as you said, I mean, he played more minutes than everyone else. It's not like he wasn't out there all game. But personally, I'm of the mind that switching Brogdon and Mirotic and then having Mirotic as the bench big and using less Ersan would be a good thing, and I'm curious to see where you're at with that.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of things with the rotation. So first of all, Pat Connaughton only plays 10 minutes. That didn't surprise me, because when we sort of discussed this and we looked at the rotation and what was going to happen, because Brogdon wasn't going to stay at 16 minutes. I mean, he was always going to come up and someone had to take a hit. So Pat Connaughton was the obvious guy there, but again, credit where credit's due. Pat Connaughton, 10 minutes, 6 rebounds, got a really big offensive rebound as he just did. He just came flying in from nowhere to get that. So I'm kind of cool with that. I'm cool with Pat playing 10 minutes of just stupid energy basketball. Like, if that works in the playoffs, and if he comes in and gets a couple of offensive rebounds, you're like, okay, job done, Pat. You can chill now. Let's get
his come from behind block on Kawhi was just peak Patsy.
Right, exactly. That block as well. I mean, that's so for 10 minutes from Pat, like, okay, we will take that. Remember, he was playing at a period of the game where the Bucks were really trying to hang on. So when you look at the plus minus for the game, the starters' numbers are a little bit inflated because of that big run to end the game. But Pat plays, you know, through the struggles, and he ends up a plus one. So that's probably indicative of the energy he brought. But the Ersan number, to me, has more to do with Brook Lopez playing 34 minutes, because that's not a normal number for Lopez. But as I sort of said earlier, there was a stretch through the second quarter where perhaps Lopez wouldn't play as much, but Lopez had two big offensive rebounds and putbacks, and then also hit a three. So there's a stretch of sort of 7 points there for Lopez where the Bucks were desperate for any type of offense. And I think it was just through circumstance that Lopez or that Ersan sort of took that hit for Brook. I mean, you can't expect that type of night from Lopez every night, because it was just, I mean, absolutely insane. But I think that's definitely why the rotation sort of played out the way it did last night. Mirotić, I mean, I actually thought that Mirotić defensively was pretty good. When he was put in situations where he had to defend one-on-one, he continues to sort of impress me, actually. He can, and we spoke about this before the series, but his feet are pretty quick, and he doesn't really get blown by as easily as you would think he would, particularly with some of the guys that he's being asked to defend out there. The tough thing for Mirotić is offensively, really no luck putting the ball on the floor. And when the Bucks were struggling to find good shots, there was a couple of times where Mirotić did try and drive to the rim, and it wasn't good. It did not look pretty at all. He ended up sort of trying to throw up sort of an ugly, flip shot a couple of times, and it didn't work well. And then he wasn't hitting the threes. So not a great offensive night for Mirotić. And I think when you think about how you're going to judge a Mirotić good or bad game, like I can talk about his defense, and I thought it was pretty good, but offensively, it's probably what most people are going to look at, and it was a rough night. And the easy thing to do is look at Brogdon hitting all those shots and say, okay, well, just start Brogdon and take Mirotić out. But it's going to be interesting to me to see how that does play out, because in the end, I don't think it really matters who starts. I mean, Brogdon still plays more minutes than Mirotić, so does it matter who's on the floor to start the game? I don't really think so. Mirotić had a couple of three-point attempts early in the game. If he hits those, then you probably change your whole, idea of how this sort of will work. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but all I will say is Brogdon was super impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he continues to drive. He continues to... all the things that we're used to seeing Malcolm Brogdon do well, he's doing well again, and it's nice to see him sort of come back, come through, and just play without, it looks like, any too much worry or any nagging issues with that injury. I mean, I think you said after the dunk, or was it after a block?
Yeah, the dunk.
The dunk, yeah. He didn't have a block. I don't know what I was thinking of. But yeah, after the dunk, you said, oh, looks like that foot is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's always funny when someone comes back from such a long-term injury, and foot injuries are concerning. I mean, they are a concerning injury to have for any athlete. But he said he was feeling 100%. And you're like, oh, well, you're like, okay, Malcolm, well, I mean, of course you're going to say that. What else are you going to say? You're not going to come out and say, yeah, I'm feeling a little bit worried about this, or I'm 85%. But he's been trying to assure anyone that will listen that he's 100% and he's ready to play. I mean, he really looked as good as he ever has last night. I didn't see any concerns with anything. As I said, defensively, he was on Kawhi, when Middleton was off the floor. And then down the other end, he's making shots. He's getting into the paint. Three assists as well for Brogdon, 3 for 6 from three, a team high plus 18 on the box score, 26 minutes, right, second game back. So you go 16, then straight to 26. So, I this was a real question mark for mine when you're trying to assess how far this Bucks team can go or what their absolute best is. They needed Malcolm Brogdon to be somewhere close to his normal self. I think the big question now will be, how does he recover with only one day off after playing 26? That's going to be a question, and we're going to have to wait and see. But I don't think the early results could have been any more positive for Malcolm.
No, I agree. And just one last thing here, I think, on Brogdon is I thought earlier in this game there were a couple moments that he came through and got a bucket, either I think mostly threes, but he also did have that nice dunk. But I think he kept the Bucks in this game, where even we talked about how Milwaukee always finds a way to stay involved, blah, 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 everything else. Brogdon was the guy who... A couple times it felt like the Raptors were ready to really kind of open this thing up a little bit. I mean, they never got a huge lead. They never got too much past 10 points, it felt like. I have to go back and look, but it felt like the Bucks kept it to around there or lower for most of those three quarters when no threes are falling outside of Brogdon. But really thought he was crucial in making this one of these games where the Bucks could rely on, okay, we'll get back to what we do well and we can take this thing. And then they did.
Yeah, I asked Bud that exact question after the game. I said, to me, you guys look like you're in a bit of trouble. And as you already pointed out, when Brogdon hit those two threes, when he hit both of them, I was like, man, they needed that in the absolute worst way. And Bud said that is part of his answer to my question. He just said, yeah, Brogdon was phenomenal. I don't think we were very good as a group, and Malcolm was one of those guys that kept us afloat. So we already talked about Brook kind of keeping us afloat, and Brogdon really did it. I think what he's doing defensively is impressive. His second game back after not playing for a significant period of time, it's just impressive. We certainly needed him tonight. And I think that, that's a pretty straight up answer from Bud, but that was it. They needed him. And, you know, when you think about how long he's missed to get that guy back and contributing in that manner, playing fourth quarter minutes in a close playoff game, just big. Just big. I don't know. There's no other word to describe Brogdon. Look, this is the funny thing here. We've gone for 35 minutes already. We have not got a lot of time left, and we haven't even really spoke about Giannis or Chris or Bledsoe. and I think that's a really, really positive sign for the Bucks. Giannis, we did talk about the minutes he played. He played 37 minutes. He finishes as 24 points, 14 rebounds, 6 assists, two steals, 3 blocks. Just did what he's done all year, filled up the box score. 7 for 16 from the field. So it wasn't all easy going for him. Had to work through, some heavy contact in the first half. But, you know, this is the playoffs. And you can't get caught up in that, and he didn't, as he hasn't all postseason long. Finishes with 12 free throw attempts on the game, and as we see all the time with Giannis, it was just in the end relentless attack that appeared to just wear down the Raptors to the point where by the end of the fourth quarter you were like, they don't really have much left in the tank to try and stop this guy who is just going to keep coming and coming and coming.
No, I agree. And I think you have to kind of use the term sort of modified, but when Giannis, struggles or is quiet all by his standards, of course, a lot of times I start to look at, after what the Bucks are doing offensively, I know the TNT guys were clamoring for more pick and rolls. Everyone who knows me knows I'm never against that. But I think one thing you have to look at is how are the Bucks doing defensively? Because when they start to get those blocked shots and stop the Raptors from making everything, and it felt early in this game, first half, like the Raptors were making literally everything. But when that happens, it's usually harder for Giannis because we know how good he is in transition and against not all the way set defenses. And he's still an elite player, again, in the half court. It's not like he can't do anything, but he's just a guy where the danger level goes up when he's moving with the ball in space or his teammates are. I mean, we all know this, and I think you can see sometimes the things go hand in hand. When the Bucks defense generates those stops and gets the ball moving early and some of those missed threes by the other team, get rebounded and everyone starts moving back, that's when Giannis can do so much damage. And it's just one of those where once the Bucks defense tightened up, and part of it was just the Raptors not making everything outside of Lowry, I think we just saw things open up a lot for him, and he was able to find more success in the second half.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And just to your last point about the Raptors starting to miss shots, I think that, sometimes this Bucks team, and I think they really understand it, that sometimes you just got to weather the storm. And at halftime, when you're in the game, you're only down by 8, and you look and the Raptors are shooting 50% from 3 on a much, much higher volume than they usually shoot. I think these guys just look at each other and say, well, we're just going to keep pushing, and eventually the tide is going to turn, and it did. So Giannis, again, it's always such a weird thing to say with him to have 24, 14, 6, 2, and 3 and say, well, look, he was pretty good. But, on a night where he was overshadowed to a degree by Brook Lopez, still lots of room for improvement for Giannis, and that's scary for the Raptors. I just want to make a point on Middleton, because this was something I said yesterday on one of the pregame shows, was I don't really care what Middleton scores in this series. I don't. Like, it does not bother me, because if he's going to be able to keep Kawhi Leonard to shooting like he did last night, 10 for 26 from the field, I couldn't care less if Middleton goes from scoring 20 points to 11, because that's a game-winning effort from Middleton on the defensive end. He did struggle to shoot. He was only 4 for 12, 1 for 6 and 3. He finishes with only 11 points, but he picks up 11 rebounds. He has 4 assists. And as I said, most importantly, keeps Leonard to 31 points. And let's not forget one of the more important defensive possessions of the game, where he just harassed Danny Green above the perimeter till Danny Green basically just nearly tripped over his own feet. He was that rattled by Middleton being in his face the whole time. Middleton gets a steal, and that was for that Lopez dunk you talked about, when the Bucks, you know, were really trying to put this game away. So I couldn't care less about Middleton scoring last night. For mine, he was one of the most important Bucks players on the roster.
No, I completely agree with that. I think he was one of the guys who suffered from a low variance night. He made one late, but ends up 1 for 6 from 3-point territory.
A big one, by the way, which shouldn't surprise anyone.
No, Chris Money Middleton is a 16-game player. I'll die on that hill, but you know, if a couple more of his threes fall, all of a sudden it's not as low scoring of a game as it sort of appears to be. I thought he had a couple good looks that didn't fall. And I thought some of his Tough Shot Express looks were huge shots for Milwaukee. I mean, this guy is not backing down from anything. Best plus minus among the starters, by the way, for a guy who scores 11 points on 12 shots. But like you said, I mean, when you pick up the Kawhi Leonard assignment and you do a damn good job of it, I don't want to hear anybody – I completely agree. I don't want to hear anybody saying anything about Chris not scoring enough, because Chris knows right now in this series against a team that outside of Kawhi, like we've talked about, doesn't have a lot of consistent offense. If you do a good job on that guy, that's more important than what he can add on the other end, especially on a Bucks team where, you know, there's Giannis, there's himself, but there's guys like – I mean, Brook Lopez was the guy tonight. We know he can score points. We know most nights – Nikola Mirotic is a guy who can give you an efficient near 20 points. And also, the last guy of the big three here, sort of, Eric Bledsoe, who every time he shoots, I wish that we could make it illegal for him to shoot before there's like 2 seconds on the shot clock in the state of Wisconsin and Canada. Some of his threes, they give me heartburn. They give me anxiety. I can't stand them. But when Eric Bledsoe drives with the basketball, I mean, it's you can tell why early on in his career, his nickname was Mini LeBron, because the guy is strong, he's crafty, he's smart, he can flip the ball out of there if he needs to, but such a great finisher through contact. He went on a solo run himself as well that I thought was huge, both for his sake, as we give these constant updates on, oh, how's Bledsoe doing in the playoffs? Little rough early, he bounced back to start the second half after not scoring in the first half, but I thought just more of that from him is huge, especially because, I mean, you do have to account for Chris probably scoring less in this series with the toughest defensive assignment, you know, any Buck could draw.
Yeah. Just on Bledsoe, you know, obviously his shot is not falling from the outside at the moment. But like I always say with him, he just has to stay aggressive, as you said. And, you know, when I looked at it at halftime and he only had 3 shot attempts, I kind of like, that's not really good enough for him. He needs to be pushing the ball more. And we saw he had a little 7-point personal run. He only finishes with 9, but those 7 points in the third quarter, really, I felt that's when the Bucks felt like, okay, now we're getting back in the game. We're doing what we want to do. The Raptors are starting to feel a little bit of pressure here. So that's what Bledsoe does. He controls the tempo of this team. And not the best scoring night. And when you look, well, Larry had 30 and Bledsoe only had 9 and George Hill wasn't able to score in a night, you're like, okay, well, look, Kyle Lowry, you take the battle in game one, but to have such a big disparity at the point guard spot and not get the win again for the Raptors, it felt like, and look, we'll see what happens in game two, but to me, that felt like a real backbreaker for the Raptors. I mean, it could have been a real series altering win, and they just fell short.
I think it ended up being a series altering win. It wasn't that for Toronto. Right. One other thing that's important, ship station.
Man, you're like living it late today, man. I'm about to wrap this thing up, but hey, go for it.
This is a buzzer beater. We gotta shout out to ShipStation. It's very important to both of us. I mean, when you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. It's time consuming. It's expensive. So many carriers to choose from. How do you know you're making the best choice? You do if you use ShipStation. That's why you need ShipStation. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. Get them out quickly. Save money on shipping costs. And you can keep your customers happy. And really, that's the most important thing. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface, making them really easy to manage from any device, even your cell phone. And right now, Eurostep listeners can try ShipStation free, no cost, for 60 days when you use promo code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering your credit card info. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in BLUE. ShipStation.com, promo code BLUE. We just got to continue. If the Bucks need to continue making ship happen, I think that's the bottom line right now from this series.
Yeah, no, it is. And as I said, there's a late in the shot clock ad read from Utah. But there's
4 bounces. The ad read bounced 4 times, but it dropped.
Right. But for the Bucks now, as we've sort of mentioned a couple of times, this series, there's no messing around with this series. There's none of this 2 days off, 3 days off, none of that rubbish in this series. They're just 1 day off in between, and they're going to keep rolling the whole way through. So the Bucks will practice today. So it's very early. So whenever, I don't know when this episode's going to drop, hopefully in the next hour or so, but it's still before 7 a.m. On Thursday morning here. So the Bucks will practice today. And game two will be tomorrow night, 7:30 at Fiserv Forum. The Bucks very easily could have been trailing 1-0 again in the series, but a huge fourth quarter and a career playoff game for Brook Lopez gets the Bucks a 108-100 victory. And as I said at the very top of this podcast, we were hoping for to be able to be a little bit more positive than we were after game one, and I think we were certainly able to do that. Game two Friday night, as I said, at 7:30. And Ty, really, the Bucks are looking to take a really, really commanding lead in this series going to Toronto.
Yeah, I think so too. Just one sort of last quick basketball thing. Personally, and I don't think this jives with what Bud does, so I don't know if it'll work. I would look at matching Giannis's minutes to Siakam's minutes. I don't think Siakam like kills you to such a degree when he's matched up with Ersan. I mean, he does, but I don't know if it like ruins the game for you. But I just think when Giannis was on him, it felt like he was so little a factor, and I just think that could be a decisive thing for the Bucks. That's one thing I would like to see more of going forward, more attention to just taking away Siakam, because then you force Lowry to be this good or somebody else to stand up for the Raptors to win. And, you know, now Toronto needs to win 4 of the next 6 to take this series. Anytime you can make some life harder for one of the Raptors players, take one guy out, it just decreases the likelihood of those 4 wins. And I mean, that's all that matters right now is getting out of here, getting those 4 wins for the Bucks, not letting the Raptors win. I don't know. I think it could be important going forward.
Yeah, I don't totally disagree with that, but I just don't think Bud really cares. If I'm honest, I just don't think he cares. Yeah. He's just like, whatever, I've got my rotation and I'm not going to change it unless it's a real disaster out there. So it's going to be interesting. As I said, Siakam played 42 minutes. I don't think Giannis is going to play 42, you know, in this series. I mean, we'll see once they go to Toronto, maybe on the road. When the team's under a little bit more pressure, we saw that against Boston. Giannis's minutes definitely went up. But, yeah, I mean, I do think that the Raptors really only have three guys that are going to that can win you a game, Leonard, Siakam, and Lowry. Lowry may have thrown his best punch already. That remains to be seen. I mean, I guess he could be a 75% three-point shooter through this series on nine shots a game. I mean, hey, it would be it would be next level Chris Middleton playoffs from last year type of stuff, but you never know. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, we're pushing 50 minutes here, so we will be back again, obviously, in the post game for game two. You'll be watching that one, I assume, from home, or what's the plans?
Probably home. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Well, I was just wondering, maybe you get down to Fiserv. I saw some of the shots last night, and that just looked like absolute chaos out there during the game, despite the fact there was 18,000 in the arena. So it was also a beautiful night. It was 65 degrees. So people were out there in Milwaukee, but they'll be back again. That was on a weeknight. It's Friday night, as I said, 7:30 for game two of the Eastern Conference Finals. Ty, I will be talking to you after that game. And as I said, maybe the Bucks will have a 2-0 lead.
Maybe. This was promising toward that. So we'll see how it goes from there. But yeah, exciting start to the series. And, you know, Bucks now 3 wins away from the NBA Finals, which still doesn't entirely feel real. I don't know if it's really set in yet. First time Milwaukee would go there since 1974. Exciting times for Bucks fans. But yeah, we are running long here, probably my fault with the buzzer beater ship station ad, but thanks everybody for listening. We always appreciate it. We hope you continue to do so. We hope you tell your friends. We hope you rate and review on iTunes or wherever you listen, Spotify. We're all over. Art19, we're there as well. And thank you, Kane, but you know, we will talk again after game two, and hopefully it's another positive episode of the Eurostep.